It was not until the Survivor Series where they found their guy in The Rock, and it was a phenomenal job of building to it, how he was positioned as the main heel in the company after the Survivor Series when he turns heel, becomes the corporate champ. He kind of did the pseudo face turn. People were just really cheering for him.
That was a great stretch.
And he was positioned as a face, but he never really did an official face turn. The crowd was just really cheering for him a lot. And they made him into the corporate champ at the Survivor Series. And that was one of those moments where it's like, okay, there's very clearly two big stars in this promotion above everyone else. You knew probably the day after, because they did the one-on-one match, and
right.
they kind of screw Austin out of it, where there's a lot of interference, and it was a not clean finish.
Undertaker hit him in the head with a shovel.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And you knew that you would build toward a Rock-Austin main event the following year at WrestleMania 15, and it would do huge business, because those were the two clear. I mean, at that point, they were bigger. I remember, as an aside, they were the two biggest names, but it was very clear when they got in the ring against each other, WrestleMania 15, they were the two biggest names in the business. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Rock cut a promo as the corporate champ, where he buried all of the WCW guys' catchphrases. Do you remember the promo I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Where he's like, where it's just like the most electrifying line goes, and he would start doing a Hogan line, and then he would cut himself off. He's like, no, that's not it. And then mm-hmm. he did his line. And I remember watching at the time and being like, you know what? 6 months ago, this would have been ridiculous. I'm like, The Rock is just much cooler, much better, and a much bigger star than all of those guys in WCW, including your boy, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Okay?
No doubt.
You know, he was just, it was just like, God, the way this guy's carrying himself. It's like, where did this come from?
Right.
You know, Jim Cornette always says he saw it in him and, you know, was very big on The Rock, and he was his biggest supporter. But I remember I remember watching, I was like, God, he's insulting Hulk Hogan and has every right to.
Yeah. It
didn't come across as like Shane Douglas insulting Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of Shane Douglas's shtick always seemed forced.
He believed it, but it was just like, I didn't believe it. It's like, dude, you're not as good as Ric Flair.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what I mean by forced. It was a thing of, we're supposed to believe that had it not been for politics, you could have had a better career than Ric Flair. Versus anything The Rock said, he had credibility.
Yeah, when The Rock said, he's like, this is the most electrifying. And you're like, yeah, you know, like,
right.
You know, the Rock shtick right now is so much cooler than Hogan's shtick.
Right.
So.
But in a macro sense, here's something that's very unfortunate. Because as WrestleMania 1 was the first WrestleMania of the boom period, and WrestleMania 14 would be the next, would be the first one of the next boom period, WrestleMania 15 sucked a whole lot, just like WrestleMania 2 did.
Now, WrestleMania 1 was the first of that, just because it was the first. You know
right,
what I mean? Some
right.
could argue that 84, but point well taken.
84
right.
was the first year of the boom, but yeah, it was the first. We went from the WrestleMania that started the boom in both instances being followed by a very lackluster second WrestleMania.
This drop-off, though, from 14 to 15 in terms of quality of show is far more pronounced than I'd say 1 to 2.
It
just because 1 was not on the level of a 14.
Right.
I know from a business perspective, a notoriety perspective, there's some comparisons. But yeah, 15, other than the Austin Rock, which was the...
It was a one-match show,
it delivered.
It did deliver.
It technically, I know wrestling fans, is not their first match on
right.
pay-per-view. They had a pseudo-match brawl thing.
For the IC title.
At the Generation X.
Yeah.
That pay-per-view, December 97. But this was their first true match
right.
on pay-per-view.
First main event match.
Yeah, it's their first of three matches at a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
They alternate years, as we'll get through here, obviously. It's probably... I'd put it in the middle. It's obviously nowhere near as good as the 17, but
right.
I liked it better than WrestleMania 19 just because I hate that dynamic was
right.
bad, I thought. The dynamic was right. You had the heel corporate shit. This was one of the last WrestleManias, I think, where they did a very traditional build.
Yeah.
And it worked where you build your heel champion up and he loses to the babyface challenger. Who's the top? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This was kind of like, you know, Hogan winning it back from Savage. This had that feel to it.
It did.
And much like a WrestleMania 5, okay, which is a total one-match show that did huge numbers on pay-per-view, the undercard reeked on this. This is universally hailed as one of the worst WrestleManias ever. It's certainly in my bottom three, along with 9 and 11.
Yeah.
And the reason this one gets so maligned is that it's got the Vince Russo fingerprints all over it. People killed the Royal Rumble of that year. They killed the King of the Ring of that year. This was kind of the height of Vince Russo's booking period before he leaves to go to WCW and, yep. And ruins that particular organization. And it does need to be said that the WWE during this period was doing incredible ratings. I mean, out of this world ratings, ratings that they will never do again.
A lot of guys were really over, but that's what makes this show stink. How could you have a WrestleMania like this with so many guys that were over, particularly compared to where they were 12 months ago?
Now, here's what's interesting, though.
What?
It's been a little revision. This WrestleMania, I remember at the time, and maybe I was just reading in the wrong places and talking to the wrong people, was not ripped the way other bad WrestleManias have been.
I agree ripped. With that.
You yeah. know, it seemed like, okay, WrestleMania happened. It's like, yeah, okay, this, everything, you know, everything was just, I mean, they would go on in April and May of 99 to do just phenomenal television ratings. In June, you know, the Austin Undertaker match doing the biggest cable rating they've ever done in June.
Yeah.
I mean, the ratings, I mean, this didn't hurt it at all. So,
right.
again, it just shows kind of like maybe people like you and us compared to the public at large. The public at large got what they wanted. They got the guys that were over doing their shticks, even if it didn't necessarily make that much sense in some of the matches that we'll get to. But they saw their big money match. The right guy goes over. Austin beats The Rock for the title. The Rock was, at this point, now you talk about the previous year, it was very obvious The Rock was going to be a very strong baby face.
Right.
You know, and kind of, it was at this point a 1A, 1B. With all him and Austin.
It was even more pronounced than it was a year ago, where I said a year ago at WrestleMania,
it
first became evident, okay, he's got a little bit of a run left as a heel, then he's going to be a red-hot face. Now, I mean, they were trying so hard to keep him heel, even with the stuff like, don't do Sing Along with the Rock.
Yeah, that was good. And he was, the thing that was cool, though, is he still acted like a heel. You know what?
Right.
He would do very, you know, like...
But he acted like a heel when he was a face a lot of times, too. The way he would be, he was kind of a bully. Quite frankly,
oh, yeah,
and
he
a
was.
Prick.
Yeah, he was. And
but it was great. It was
as
entertaining.
A heel, yeah, he was.
Right.
He was really unbelievable. I mean, he was. This was during the period. If you remember, he'd wrestled the matches with Foley, obviously the famous
right.
I Quit match, where you know he plastered him with you know eight, like whatever it was, 15,
right.
20 unprotected chair shots. He was doing things like remember he would get on commentary and start doing the commentary for his own matches when
yeah.
he was fighting the guy. He would like shove Michael Cole. Grab the headset and he would start doing
yeah,
comment.
That like, was awesome.
Yeah, I mean he was just thinking so outside the box, and it was funny because as a worker he had not reached his crescendo yet, but it was very clear now that it wasn't just Austin
right.
as the main guy. You now had there was no, if you're going to compare Hogan and Austin to each other as the lead dogs of each boom period, there was no Rock in Hogan's era. I mean, Randy Savage was probably that second guy, but it was always very clear that it was Hogan, then Savage.
Right.
It wasn't that clear. I mean, they were in 99 for that period between this WrestleMania, not to completely dismiss this WrestleMania, which is largely forgettable, but between this WrestleMania and then the Survivor Series where they write Austin out because he's injured... It was really close. Like, I know they kind of kept The Rock away from the title program.
Right.
For a lot of, he was like, he feud with like Mr. Ass, which was, you know, laughable. But, you know, it was very close. It was a 1A, 1B situation, not a 1 and 2 situation for who was the most overfaced in that company.
No, it's absolutely true. The other thing is here, too, leading up to WrestleMania, they gave away a match on pay-per-view, but... They gave away a very... This is how confident they were. They gave away a match, the pay-per-view beforehand, that had been a dream match for the past 11 months. They finally put Vince McMahon in the ring in a cage match, no less, with Steve Austin.
But that was a great match.
It was a great way to do it, yeah.
I've talked to people inside of, you know, so some people with some, you know, inside knowledge and knowledge of the inner workings of this company before, okay?
Okay.
About the Elimination Chamber and how it's positioned.
Okay.
And they kind of, in my opinion, that it's poorly positioned. It's a pay-per-view that the match can mean a lot.
Right.
And it probably should be elsewhere. Logistically, it's kind of a nightmare how you have to have, like, especially with two titles now.
Right.
You're putting two titles on the line half time.
I hate titles being on the line in the Elimination
yeah,
Chamber.
That's true.
It should be a contention match.
Again, yeah. Different podcast for a different
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
Austin McMahon, a feud where you've got your clear babyface who's going to go over and win the title the next month. How do you, what do you do in between him winning the Rumble, or, and he didn't actually win the Rumble, McMahon did. That's why they did. Yeah, that's why they had it. That was the impetus for actually doing the match finally. What do you do in between the Royal Rumble and him winning the title? You know, it always comes across as just kind of biting time.
Yeah.
And this was the now it did a disappointing number.
It was
on pay-per-view.
Brilliant.
It did do a disappointing. Vince McMahon has not been very good on pay-per-view when he wrestles in terms of drawing power, but it did work. I agree with you. It was the totally right match to do at the right time. But Austin goes over. And by the way, the Big Show debuts in that match. Paul White, as he was known for one night, you know, the Giant from WCW. And they just did a lot of curious things on this undercard. I mean, we don't need to go into a lot of them. Remember, they switched the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn in their match. Like, the Road Dogg kind of, like any team, they immediately want to split the guys up and have them go to solo success.
Right.
And it kind of worked a little bit here. Billy Gunn was always he was, of course, one of the most, in my opinion, overrated workers of all time.
Yep.
You know, Dolph Ziggler, to me, is a better – I've always called him Billy Gunn with talent because they kind of look alike,
I
think.
That's true.
But he actually – where Billy Gunn, you know, he was always supposed to be, you know, this great breakout talent, solo star. It never happened. I remember he wrestled Ken Shamrock going up to the show. And, like, it was just obvious, man. The guy just didn't have any moves.
Well, he didn't – he looked the part, but he couldn't bring anything else to it. It's why I told you I really disliked the Smoking Guns as the anchor babyface team of the earlier 90s. I hated them in that role. They did nothing for me. And it had nothing to do with – you said that you didn't like them wearing jeans. I don't like that either. It looks Dime Store and indie, but – give me
I just
guys,
thought it was uncomfortable.
Give me guys
I didn't
like who
their
can,
mustaches and jeans.
Yeah,
that was bad.
Give me guys who can deliver in the ring, and
I don't know if it was effort level or what it was. They actually did some kind of like cool. I couldn't get past the gimmick, but here it was. He had a good gimmick, and he's just one of those guys that's good in a tag team because he was the guy who always gets the hot tag in the New Age Outlaws, and it always worked. But you can't do hot tag offense for a 10-minute match because he would just come in. He would just like do all these punches, and you know he had a drop kick, and he just didn't have a lot. He was very bland.
Well, they switched him up, so rather than go in order, let's get this part of the crappy part of the undercard out of the way.
But
here.
Yeah, so he was involved. Yeah. Like he was feuding with Ken Shamrock at the time, and like they had
Val Venus
got involved. There was the ill-fated Ryan Shamrock angle. Yep. Val Venus, by the way, for you know people want to make he was very over at this time period.
He was
and. They sort of just, like, randomly, like, they had on an episode of Raw, Billy Gunn win the Hardcore title, which the Road Dogg had kind of been feuded with Al Snow and Hardcore Holly with. And Road Dogg actually did work. You know, he was obviously a much more limited worker on paper than Billy Gunn, but he was getting over kind of doing the Hardcore stuff, and they inexplicably switched up, like, the Road Dogg. Didn't he win, like, won the Intercontinental title?
He did.
The same Raw.
OMG Swerve.
Yeah, that was total Russo there. That's why people, it's like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Like, it makes no, like, just because people know it's coming, the match doesn't mean you have to, like, go against it. So, and then they, like, both lose the titles on the show,
well,
I think.
Well, Road Dogg won.
He did?
Four Corners Elimination match for the
Intercontinental
title.
That shows how memorable
title.
That was.
He defeated Ken Shamrock, Goldust with Blue Meanie and Ryan Shamrock and Val Venus.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. That Goldust was randomly inserted in the Intercontinental, even though, like, for no reason. He had been brought back. Remember, he was Dustin Runnels, just for sure, but, like, a Bible-thumping guy.
Right.
And then he, like...
Well, it was a swerve on he is coming, and they made it seem like it was going to do a religious gimmick, but it was a swerve to him becoming Goldust again.
Yes. And, you know, so both matches and programs sucked.
Every time we're talking about Vince Russo, we say swerve, we should have to, you know, pound a shot or something here.
Well, I'm down. I'm down. Hey, I got some Patron right there over your left shoulder there, buddy.
Very nice. Okay. Very nice. And you're not talking about Anthony Patron.
No, I'm not.
The other one, in the Hardcore title match, Hardcore Holly defeated Billy Gunn, who came in as the champion, and Al Snow in a triple threat Hardcore match. For the title. Other meaningless undercard crap on Heat. D'Lo Brown and Test won when Draws and the Godfather eliminated one another. A 21-man battle royal to become the number one contenders to the tag team title. So they were randomly paired up to lose to Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett, the tag team champions.
Yeah, but in their defense, Mark, they had a program. Owen and Jarrett were... I thought they were a pretty good team together, pretty thrown together for being a thrown together heel
Absolutely.
Team. And, you know, Deborah was kind of billed as the star of the team. But they were feuding with D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry at the time. Mark Henry, wouldn't you know, got injured.
Yeah.
And they did this dumb gimmick where they had a battle royal in Heat and the last two guys would challenge for the titles.
Yeah.
So, you know, D'Lo was kind of involved in the program, so you kind of knew he would get, I guess, they shouldn't have done it at all with D'Lo, you know? They should just been like, tough luck, D'Lo, your buddy got hurt and you got screwed. But Test was a heel. He was in the corporation.
Yeah.
This made no sense. I mean, this is one of those things that if you watch it, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just one of those things where I think they liked Test and wanted to get him on the card.
Right.
So even though it made completely no sense at all, they teamed up with D'Lo Brown, and they, of course, lose.
Complete garbage.
Thank God they didn't win, though, actually. It's better that they lost than won.
That's true. That's true. 35 seconds, the Brawl for All match. Bart Gunn, the Brawl for All champion. Kids, go look this up on YouTube, and it is hilarious to watch Bart Gunn's nose get punched back into his brain by Butterbean. Oh, my God, this was something.
Look, it was just, you talk about Billy Gunn not having the goods. Bart Gunn had even less goods.
Right.
And he was kind of the Brawl for All was a disaster. That was one of Jim Ross's real bad ideas.
Guys got hurt.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a setup for Steve Williams to win it, but then he got hurt.
He did, and well, no, he gets knocked out. But
well,
he loses, but then he also got hurt. Yeah, he loses to Bart Gunn, and it was one of those things that Bart Gunn winds up winning it, and
useless charisma vacuum winning.
And it's
thing.
One of those things that's like, okay, like, you know, we talk about how they kind of fell into these things. Like,
yeah.
You think, okay, well, maybe they've got something to go with Bart Gunn now. Then he kind of remembered he was Bart Gunn, and it just wasn't very good. And they tried to put him in a tough game. This was bad.
Brawl for All. It's like, hey, morons, there's a reason in the early days of the 20th century they started working this crap instead of letting it be a shoot.
Yeah. I mean, and they kind of knew that. I'm sure. I mean, who would have, you know, I mean, they kind of knew Bart Gunn was going to get his lunch. So it was stupid. It was awful.
Yeah, this next one, again, this could have meant so much more. Mankind defeated the Big Show by disqualification. He wins to become special guest referee of the main event at 6:50. It was a thing where he won by DQ because they just brought in the Big Show. They were still trying to protect him a little bit, but it was
just a stupid way to do it. Just put the Big Show against a bum and have him beat him in like 10 seconds.
And this was a late announced match in true Russo fashion. This could have been used again. I think they did a pretty terrific buy rate anyways off Austin and The Rock, but still, this could have contributed to the buy rate had you treated it like a real match.
Yeah, but it boiled down to, and they get into this situation a lot more nowadays, where it's like, okay, you have Mick Foley, who had won the title against The Rock tremendously over, was at probably the pinnacle of his career.
Right.
As an over babyface, you have the new heel, the Big Show, and it's like, okay, what do we do with these two?
Right.
So they have them have a meaningless match, and Foley always wanted to be a part of the main event, and it was like their weak way of getting the first time in back-to-back years, a very weak way of involving him in the main event of WrestleMania.
That's true, yeah, because he had lost the title back to The Rock after winning it for the first time. The rest of the undercard here, Kane...
It's all DX-related. It was the death of DX, really.
It was, yeah.
Kane, for at least a while, with China.
Yeah, Kane with China defeated Triple H by disqualification at 11:33. The only match of the undercard over 10 minutes, true, again, Russo booking, Crash TV, on pay-per-view.
Yeah, and people might have just thought you misspoke there.
Yeah.
And you didn't.
I did.
Well, Kane with China. They had done this. This was vintage Russo.
Yeah.
A one-hour face turn from China here. China had joined the corporation turning on Triple H. I think it was an I Quit match against The Rock on Raw. And so Triple H and China were kind of feuding here, and Kane got involved by proxy. It was bizarre that Kane was... This is so Russo. Kane was involved in the corporation but didn't want to be. China turns back with Triple H, revealing it was all a setup to get at Kane.
Right.
And then it bleeds into the next match where Triple H and China are reunited and turn heel on X-Pac and they join the corporation.
Yeah, Shane successfully defended the European Championship against X-Pac. In that match, and with the breakup of Triple H and X-Pac there, the dissolution of DX, and then
from there, you know, the Outlaws would break up. Mr. Ass, you know, Billy Gunn turns heel, and you know, the Road Dogg stays face, and X-Pac and Road Dogg kind of were buddies, and you know, they wanted to push Triple H and Billy Gunn as the two heels.
And to an extent, we can say this was history. I guess we could say because it was this heel run that Triple H started here that really led to his mega stardom. And
well,
if we're going to be not cynical and talk about the other things that led to his mega stardom, this run in 99 and 2000.
Well, yeah, but let's talk about them, to be fair.
That's
he was very bland. He was very bland and not over at the beginning of the heel turn. I thought at first the push, and I was not alone, the push was very unjustified.
And
I think
you talk about Cleveland. Wasn't it Cleveland that summer? Yeah, that he did the promo, I am the game. I think that was in Cleveland.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was. Summer 99, yeah, that I am the game.
We're getting into the weed years, like I said, where I need help reading the card. Unlike WrestleMania 6, where I could mortify you and name the card off without looking, I start getting confused during this period.
Yeah, you're relying on Wikipedia as much as me.
Yeah.
Sable defended the Women's Championship against Torrey 5:09 in a match that pretty much meant nothing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, this was like a stalker thing. This was they did the same thing a couple years later, WrestleMania, with Trish Stratus and what's-her-face, Mickey James.
Mickey James,
yeah. It was very similar, except much worse.
Except it was great. It was much better when Mickey James licked the V.
Yeah, and Joe Linway came in and gave his love for that. That was good. But, this was worthless. And Shane McMahon, by the way, I wanted to back up here, as we're getting hailed on here, by the way, on the North Coast.
Yeah.
That was the first time Shane McMahon did a one-on-one match. There was a lot of intrigue going into that.
There really was, yeah. It had the unexpected ending. Shane McMahon, again, a pretty good worker for a guy who didn't work that much. And
he tried. They did a good job. Yeah.
And who was eminently capable of being carried by X-Pac. This was one of the longer matches on the undercard at 8:41. The match that I guess would be the semi-main out of the bunch for lack of anything else. 9:48, The Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeated the Big Boss Man in a Hell in the Cell match. One of the most forgettable Hell in a Cell matches ever.
As a matter of fact,
next to Hell in a Kennel. Yeah.
Well, that's not a Hell in a Cell, in my opinion.
All right.
This, though, when they ever show a Hell in the Cell video package, it would be funny because we've got one coming up with the current WrestleMania, Triple H and Undertaker. They never show this one in the video package.
Right.
I think a couple times they've shown a clip just because they ended it with the Boss Man hanging from this is when they
symbolically hanging.
Yes. they did. This was the Triple A. This was a heel versus heel match. It was that bizarre period where the Undertaker had come back with the Ministry of Darkness.
Right.
It was before that they did the corporate ministry. Again, this had Russo's fingerprints all over it. It was just, this was basically. And keep in mind, what's funny is this is before the streak became a big thing. This is only when people like you and I knew The Undertaker never lost a WrestleMania match. This was just an excuse to put The Undertaker over because he got the big heel push post-WrestleMania.
Right. And while the Boss Man hadn't done much in this reign in the WWE, or WWF at the time, he carried a big name from the boom years, so it was a thing of the residual.
It was kind of funny.
Much like when they brought King Kong Bundy back to face him 4 years previously, coast off of the name.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember when he debuted as the head of security of the corporation.
Right.
That drew heat. It was kind of like, okay, he was always lost at sea in WCW because everyone looked at him and saw Big Boss Man.
Right.
And it's like he came back and was allowed to be called the Big Boss Man again.
Right.
And look, he wasn't good. I mean, but it was kind of, it just seemed like everything was in its right place, as the old Radiohead song goes.
Exactly. And by the way, and I said this before, and I know I'm in the tiny minority and that I liked the Big Bubba Rogers character better than the Big Boss Man. I'm in the tiny minority on this one also, since we're talking about these guys here. Undertaker of this era. Personally, my preference for his theme music has always been the Ministry era theme music. That was my favorite. That was my favorite Undertaker.
That was phenomenal rhythm, Rick Morris.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Rhythm Ricky,
With my quasi-laryngitis, I'm sure that sounded even worse. But yeah, that is my favorite Undertaker theme music era.
This was like a bizarre period for him. It was the Where To, Stephanie, or it came out shortly after this. They got real over the top with it. But look, he deserved to go over. Everyone knew he was going to be the lead heel because it was very obvious that The Rock was going to turn babyface after the show. So he was positioned as the main heel.
Well, and this was heel versus heel. It was very odd in that regard.
It was, and it was even odder when the Boss Man was The Undertaker's henchman 2 months after the show.
And it's a thing where, and I guess this is what makes it all the more unusual. For Vince, who, as we regress for a second to the start of where we were at with this, with the setup for the Attitude Era, Vince in November of 97, Shades of Grey. Well, Shades of Grey Not so much, because while the baby faces acted more heelish, there were still baby faces and there were still heels. Rare that you would get heel versus heel in a high-profile match.
Yeah.
This was it.
Yeah, and this was kind of one of those things where it was kind of sort of like the star being cheered over the clear JTTS
right.
guy, you know?
Right. That's absolutely true. The main event, we talked about it a little bit. It went 16:52. No disqualification match for the championship. That was a way, again, my guess is that you are starting to see already some things with Austin and the neck and concerns about the health. They tried to garbage it up where they could as
well,
far
they
as
always
get away
did.
With
during
stuff.
This period, they yeah. always had that.
Right.
They just did that because I think they would always do those long brawls. This was that
right.
during the period where, like, every main event match featured this long brawl. Like, hey, remember the old walk with me around the arena while we brawl thing, remember? You know? And I think they would just always kind of randomly make these matches no DQ and
right.
no count out just to cover for it, because some of the more jaded members of the audience were like, come on, you know, I'm
right.
the ref not count to 10 yet, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I honestly, I
you
was
were probably
that guy.
Doing
I
that.
Was that
yeah,
guy.
Yeah,
yeah,
you were probably doing that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was. But they did it, and it seemed like it worked here.
And in a no-brainer, Austin goes over and beats The Rock, and The Rock turns babyface.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we can agree that while WrestleMania 14, one of the best WrestleManias of all time, this one the worst.
This was.
Along with 9 and 11, one of the three definitive worst WrestleManias.
It was. And in the words of, if I may paraphrase the road dog, Jesse James, this was dog shiznit.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
There we go. There hasn't even been a WrestleMania since this period even nearing this one's lack of quality. I mean, there's only been one, I think, and we'll hit it, by the
yeah.
way, in this podcast, that even, like, that I even thought was a subpar WrestleMania. This was the last awful WrestleMania.
That's true.
There's not been, you know, I always talked about going back to the previous, you could break them up into
right.
different groupings.
Right.
The bottom five, I have 9, 11, 15, 1, and 2.
Right.
Is my bottom five. So, I mean, there you go. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I mean, it hasn't been anything in the last 10 years
yeah.
really even getting close to this.
I guess we got to give them credit for that much, at least. They really scraped bottom with this one.
Well, yeah, having... because they don't do the Russo stuff anymore. It's like,
right.
look, stars, you know, let's make what should be meaningful, let's make that meaningful. If it's not going to be meaningful, to hell with it, you know.
Absolutely. That's how that went.